Hi folks, welcome back to the New Music Review channel and the Q&A series of indie artist interviews. In this episode we're talking to Mike Brunacini. He's from Jamestown, New York. We're going to talk about his vinyl recordings, we're going to talk about his concept album, we're going to talk about his social media issues. Let's get into it and find out what he's up to. Welcome to the New Music Review chat, and tell us who you are, what your name is, what your artist name is, and what your music genre is all about.
Yeah, I'm Mike Brunacini, and that's also my artist name. And I kind of do a retro pop rock sort of thing. Singer-songwriter type stuff, but mostly with piano rather than guitar.
Sure, okay. And are you solo, generally?
Yeah, generally, yeah.
Okay. And what are you working from home? Is that a home studio in the background, or is it just a...
Yep. Yeah, this is real stuff over here with my board, and there's a guitar back there, yeah.
And where did you say you were located?
Jamestown, New York. It's like an hour's drive south of Buffalo, about as far away from New York City as you can be.
Sure.
Without leaving the state of New York.
What setup have you got there in terms of DAW, using Mac or PC? What software are you using generally?
I use PC. Been using Reaper, and I kind of have like... I started this hybrid setup where I have an analog board running through an interface, 24 channels in and out. That was more for like tracking drums and things, but most of the mixing I do is in the box now.
Sure.
I wanted to kind of do the old school thing, and then I tried to recall a session manually, and that's just really, really tough.
Yeah.
The tools inside the box are really cool. And unless you have like the finances to really do an analog studio the right way, it's not really worth it.
No. Although some hardware is quite cheap, like mixers and that can be fairly cheap, but some of the interface stuff that you need to make it all work still can fetch quite some money, don't they?
Yeah, it really is. A good preamp is a valuable investment, though, I'd say.
Yeah.
I don't have a super nice one, but I have like a Focusrite ISA-1.
Mm-hmm.
That does the job for me.
Yeah.
Good sure. Middle of the road sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you think being a solo artist, do you feel like you're getting everything you need from your own input, or do you think collaborative stuff from outside members or outside people could enhance what you're doing, or do you feel confident in just your own work is enough?
That's a good question, because I think I have two answers. I think what I've been able to do on my own is... I think it's good. I like it. I'm happy with it, especially, you know, every release has gotten better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is a product of like working with other mixers. Basically, I'll take my tracks that I recorded, bring them to a mixing engineer, and they will tell me in blunt terms everything I did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so each time I go get something mixed, I have detailed notes on what I can do to improve the tracking process, the arrangement process, all of that the next time. So that kind of input is invaluable. It's very important. This last album that I did, I mixed myself based on all of those, all of that insight that I got from basically two professional mixing engineers that I've worked with. As far as artistic input, you know, from other musicians, I would love to work more with other musicians. So that's, it's kind of it's a matter of finding the right time to do that. I work a full-time job outside of music. Yeah. I have a young child at home, so it's hard to find the time. And most of the people in my age group around this area are kind of in a similar situation.
Yeah.
So just finding the time is difficult, but I would love to work with other musicians. I think that would be a net positive for my music.
Yeah. I spoke to a couple of people about the same thing recently, and there was a couple of takes on it. They were both quite, like you, quite positive and keen to actually work with other people and get somebody else's input and all that sort of thing. But they were also quite conscious of the fact that you kind of, when you're on your own, you can work at your own pace, whereas that they felt there might be a little bit of pressure when you're working with a collaboration to get things done quicker and stop, you know, not mess people around and hold them up and sort of say, oh, no, well, I can't get that done this week. It'll be next week. And people might get fed up, but I think actually a lot of people are in the same boat, and they appreciate, you know, that this stuff is a bit ad hoc, and you know you don't have to get it done tonight or tomorrow night. It can wait, you know. So have you played in a band at all or you just always been solo?
I have. I played in a band called Three Philosophers for a while. We didn't make it too far, but we've had 3 or 4 years where we played and we had a set of songs that we really worked on consistently and got to a good sounding state, but we never really recorded them or anything. So I still have maybe 10 to 12 songs kind of sitting in the ether. Maybe someday I'll record them with the band or not.
Yeah. And what do you feel about your own promotion as it goes now? What's your sort of favorite platforms for pushing your own music or posting your own stuff, and how's it going?
I've been really getting into Bandcamp lately, trying to push that as my primary online music marketplace, I guess. I would like to have less people listen on Spotify, but I understand that it's convenient and everyone has it, and it's fine. I don't want to get on a soapbox and get preachy about anything. But I do like Bandcamp. I like that you can sell the physical items there too.
Yeah.
It's more of like a direct connection because you can message the fans directly right there. I've been using Threads lately. I feel like there's a pretty positive music community on Threads that there are people that I interact with on there that just seem like genuine human beings. And they're positive and they share things and it's just a good environment to be in. So I've enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's probably where we came into contact, isn't it, I guess?
Right, yeah.
I think probably.
Music threads.
Yeah.
Hashtag music threads.
Yeah. And do you think it is a bit weird, that Threads, because I found that it's, I'm not sure if it's just because I don't tend to look at much unless it's music related. And so whether it's just feeding me continually music related stuff because of that.
Yeah, I feel the same way, where any other platform I've been on is kind of a hodgepodge of a few things that I'm interested in seeing and then a lot of things that I'm not interested in seeing. Just things I don't really care about. Things that it feels like it's like an algorithm trying to force me to be interested in something.
Yeah.
Where Threads, I think, for the most part, is a little bit more sensitive to what I'm actually interested in. Which is good so far. I mean, I know it's meta, so eventually they're going to get ads in there and ruin it. But we're kind of in the sweet spot now with that one. It hasn't gotten too big yet.
Yeah. And as far as things, because, you know, I started the whole review thing by accident, really. It started through some YouTube stuff, and then it rolled along a little bit, and then I decided, rightly or wrongly, that a website would be a better hub for me to pull everything together, send everything to the website, really, and then let it sort of spider out from there. And so what's your thoughts on things like blogs and articles and review channels such as Groover or MusoSoup or Submit Hub and all that? What's your take on that? Have you used any of those things?
As far as a blog is concerned, I have a Wix website that I consider my official site. I haven't paid for a domain name or anything yet, but it's on there. And it has like all my lyrics and everything. So it's kind of like a nice centralized location where you get a little bit more than you would from a regular streaming service. I did kind of do a blog temporarily, but I kind of ran out of things to say. After a while, I feel like the songwriting is what I want to focus on. And, writing blogs ends up taking away time that I could be spending writing songs.
Yeah.
As far as like those submission kind of sites, I've tried Submit Hub, haven't had much success. I haven't tried Groover. Sorry, I think I signed up for an account with it, but I never actually utilized it. It feels difficult to spend money on something that is, I feel like it's not going to go anywhere. And part of the reason is it's, when I look at, like, I guess Submit Hub is a good example. I filter down the submission opportunities based on genre, and rarely do I see anybody accepting the genre that I'm working on or anything similar to the genre I'm working on.
So what do you think, is there anything missing in the whole picture of what you're doing to sort of project you into the next level, if you like?
I mean, the biggest problem that I've had is finding that, like, that niche, that core audience, that group that would be I know they're out there.
Mm.
I know that there are people who would like what I do, because I know that there are people who like Ben Folds.
Yeah.
And there are people who like Stephen Page, and the music that I like, there are people who like that music, but I rarely meet any of them in real life in person.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where are they is one question, but then what do they search?
Yeah.
What are they looking for? Because it's easy to just put down hashtag genre, hashtag songwriter, hashtag music. But people who listen to music aren't looking for those hashtags.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, what are they searching for? What are they looking at online? How do you get in front of them?
Yeah.
'Cause I think I've gotten to a point where the music itself is good. I think it's, I've finally gotten to a point where I'm proud of it, and I think it's worth putting out there, but how do you get it in front of people?
Yeah. I spoke to someone.
A lot of times, like, it's, you have people out there who will listen to something that, like, they hear it. They're forced to listen to it in a way, like it's on the radio or it's in a movie or a TV show. And that's how they discover it. And then they realize they like it. But if there's never any exposure to it, they won't even know what they're missing.
Yeah, I spoke to someone a couple of nights ago who had some sort of accidental success in that respect by he created a playlist of the artists that were similar to him, successful artists, like you've just talked about, people who they know, who people know in a similar genre to yours. So he created the playlist, and then he slotted sort of three or four of his songs in that playlist. And then he started banding that around into places that, people go for playlists. I mean, there's playlists, Facebook has got quite a few playlist groups. Twitter's got some more specialised places on there where you can drop playlists in. Reddit has also got playlist groups. So you can drop all those things into there and slot your three or four of your songs into it. And the people that are gravitating towards the more known artists might pick that up and then listen to it and accidentally listen to you as well at the same time, you know, and it might generate some more plays. He said that he had a sort of extraordinary amount of plays on his song because it was on this playlist.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to have to try that.
You know, so it's something to think about. So if you're not submitting to places like we talked about, Groover and the like, how are you getting your music to anybody?
I try to reach out directly to playlist curators if I can.
Yeah.
Different review sites. I've used Daily Playlists because they have a free option.
Mm-hmm.
That's hit or miss. Occasionally, I'll get on something on there that kind of takes off for a while, so that's nice.
Yeah.
Kind of like, there's a few other sites that I've submitted to, kind of using the free credit system.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then just, you know, posting it on my own channels and hoping that other people pick up on it.
Mm.
That's kind of very hit or miss.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah. Do you have a YouTube channel?
Yes.
How's that perform?
Not well, because I don't post a ton of videos. I have like a few like pretty high end. I have like two or three pretty high end music videos on there.
Yeah.
But those are not easy to make routinely.
Yeah.
I guess I just don't make that much video content.
Yeah, yeah. What about things like shorts? You know, for the like Instagram and places like that. Do you do much of that?
For a while, I was doing some reels. I tried out TikTok for a little bit. On Instagram, I feel like for a while I was getting a little traction, and then it just died. Just totally stopped. Like when I look at the stats on there, it's like this has been shown to two people that follow you and 10 people that don't.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
On TikTok, it's weird because like I've done the experiment too, where I'll post the same exact video.
Yeah.
And one day it'll get 200 views and, you know, two likes, and another day it'll get 3,000 views and 200 likes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's hard to know, is it the time of day? Is it the day itself? What is it about that?
Yeah, I have exactly the same experience. Instagram, I tend to post more artist stuff. So if I was to share your song, for example, I would snapshot the Spotify playlist or the Bandcamp or whatever, and I'd share that. TikTok, I just use for a bit of sort of goofing around with my guitar things, really. I just post them for a bit of fun. But you're right, they do get, you know, absolutely totally different views. a guitar thing the other day, got I think 5,000 views in a matter of a couple of days. The same one on Instagram, like probably 150 views, and I've no idea, you know, in nobody idea why that is. I'm not sure about any of it really for actual song promotion. And you know, I know they say it's the way to go if you want to get some real traction, but not sure it makes that much difference to sales. Although I think people are more interested in a kind of a bit more behind the scenes stuff. You know, I mean, if you used to film yourself like for in the studio doing mixing or doing whatever you're doing for an hour, and then chop it up into sort of 20 or 30 interesting little 30-second snips of anything, but with your finished track playing in the background, you know,
yeah,
that's the sort of thing I think that gets a little bit of traction.
I did that a little bit with for this, the last album that was just released last Friday. I did a Kickstarter for it in the spring just to raise enough money to press some vinyl, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I treated it more like a pre-order than a fundraiser, and we made just enough, no extra, just enough.
Mm.
And the promo video for that was basically B-roll footage of me recording the songs.
Mm.
Synced to the actual songs, little snippets here and there, making it, you know, feel like a behind the scenes documentary about the making of the album, but you know, cut up into little snippets. Yeah. That does work. It's I think it's pretty effective, but it's hard to have that camera going all the time.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes you just want to get down to work doing it. You don't want to have to like act for the camera.
Yeah, I think this is the split that a lot of people struggle with, really, is that they want that content, but they don't have the time or the enthusiasm to make it or produce it. It's kind of, they know they sort of need it, and it looks good if you can get around to doing it, but it is tricky to actually set it all up, you know, and maintain it consistency. You can do it once, maybe, but then the next time it becomes a bit of a chore.
Yeah, and coming up with new ideas for that, because if you do the same exact type of B-roll sync to audio every time you post a reel or a short or something, then it's not going to do as well long term.
No,
it won't be as interesting.
No.
So you have to be constantly thinking of what can I do next to make it better or different or total, like what's a totally different thing I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you playing your music live at all?
That's something I'm kind of in a part of the U.S. that there's a couple big cities around me, but they're each one is like maybe an hour to 2 hour drive.
Mm.
So finding the time to be able to do that and have the shows line up is always a difficult puzzle piece.
Yeah.
But it's something I'm actively trying to pursue again. I have an album with fully mixed band recordings, but then I play live and it's just me and a piano or just me and a guitar.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily get the vibe of the album across.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm still going to do it, you know.
Yeah. And did you say the last one was a vinyl? You've had some vinyl pressed.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went pretty well. So the last two albums I've done vinyl pressing mostly because I like vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted it.
Yeah.
And it does sell better than digital.
Right.
You know, people want, even if they don't have a turntable, I've had a lot of people buy the album that don't have any way to play it.
Really?
Because it's a cool thing to have. You know, it's like, it's just one more way for them to support the artist.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that.
You know, and get something tangible from it.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that kind of retro thing at the moment where people like to have something. I think, you know, it's a shame that record decks and vinyl it's getting a little bit more vision now, but it's still, you know, way, way down the list. But I think there is something that, you know, there's a group of people out there who do want to hold that again, and they want to look at the pictures, and they want to look at the lyrics, and they want to read a little bit about the artist on the cover or whatever, you know, and have something for your money.
There's part of the experience of consciously picking something out to do. You're not just putting it out in the background. It's, I want to dedicate the next 40 minutes to listen to this album, and I even have to flip it in the middle.
Mm.
So like, I have to be paying attention. You're taking that, there's like a meme where people say that they like vinyl for the inconvenience and the price. But I really do think the inconvenience is a good thing. It's a, that's a plus to me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it sometimes when things are so convenient, you kind of take them for granted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like sitting down with an album and intentionally listening to it is a different experience than just putting it on because you can.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and that doesn't have to be vinyl. CDs can achieve the same thing. You know, popping a CD in the CD player, you don't have to flip it halfway through, but you still have to pick it out and turn on the CD player and like sit down and listen to it in one spot.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the differences really is that prior to things like the iPod or music on your phone and all that sort of stuff, you had little choice really other than to listen to music at home generally, maybe in the car. But now, of course, it's just you can listen to it as much as you want, anywhere you want, everywhere.
Yeah. And you can turn it on with portable speakers in public or you can put it in your headphones.
Mm.
So you can force other people to hear it or you can just choose to kind of live in your own little bubble.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. So what's next for you? What's your next project?
I mean, the big thing is just getting the word out about this album. Next project would be, I've got a Christmas song that's mixed and ready to go for this year. It's not a brand new song, but it's basically it's a song I put out a few years ago. It's just a slightly better arrangement and mix, just a re-recording. I don't think it did as well as I wanted it to, and I genuinely think it's a good song. So I kind of want to give it that second chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And after that, I've got a concept album that's like my side project. It's called Aftergloom.
Mm-hmm.
It's still just me, but instead of doing the retro kind of pop rock songwriter 70s sort of thing, it's more lo-fi, electronic, experimental. Still, the melodies, they're very similar to what I always do. It's I like a good melody. That's my favorite part of a song.
Yeah.
But this project it's a one concept album split into three different parts. And this will be the third part, the final piece.
Sure.
It's kind of a story of a young girl going through the loss of a parent. And so she chooses to use her lucid dreams as a way to relive her memories and escape the grieving process. But while she's dreaming, she kind of manifests a version of her parent that's it's just in her mind, obviously, but the version of her parent in her brain becomes self-aware and it realizes that if the girl wakes up, then she's no longer going to exist. So it convinces this girl to sleep longer and longer so that it'll, you know, for its own survival.
That's a complex explanation.
Yeah, it's a
lot. How did you even, did you write all that down first? How did that come about?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's a story I've had kicking around for quite a while. And I put a lot into writing a story that actually would work as a standalone story first. And then I wrote the songs to follow it, to kind of tell the story that way.
So let's say the instrumentation or the mood or whatever it is you're using the music to reflect the lyrics, not the other way around.
Kind of, yeah. The music is kind of like painting the scene. So it starts out kind of normal. Like the first song is very much just a pop rock song, just a normal song. But the further you go into the first album, the weirder the sounds get and the more dreamy, the more synthy they become.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time you get to like the middle of the second album, it's just weird. You know, I tried to make the instrumental parts sound like you're in this dream world.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're kind of like little transitions here or there to tip off the listener as to whether the characters are in a dream or in reality. I'm excited to get to the end because I think the ending is really strong emotionally.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy with how that turned out. So I'm just excited to finish it up.
Yeah, I'm I'm quite impressed how much thought you've put into it all, really. You know, considering how much music is kind of loops and beats and stuff like that, and yet, you know, on the other end of the scale, I'd say almost, is like what you're doing, which is a real kind of a work of art, really, you know, kind of putting all the story and the music together, and also thinking about how it progresses into different styles of sounds all through one story, you know.
Yeah. Well, I love concept albums.
Yeah.
I always have. One of my favorites is the Lamb Lies Down on Broadway by Genesis.
Mm.
I wouldn't say that's necessarily an influence on this sonically.
Mm.
It doesn't really sound like that at all, but it is in terms of just the overall feel of it, the telling, just doing a concept album at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Is inspired a lot by that.
Cool. I'm going to listen to more of it now. I'm going to, because now I know what it's all about. See, it's made a lot of difference, I think, now, because I will probably listen to some of that stuff completely differently now I know what you've said about it. And I think that's some of the things that are missing, really. That's why it's good to do this sort of thing, I think, because people who just listen may not get it. But now you've sort of explained a little bit more about what's going on, then they can identify with what's going on more, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to pitch a musical idea with just the music sometimes, especially
Definitely.
In a world where people are so visually driven.
Yeah,
you know, you're constantly scrolling on a phone, looking at, you're watching movies and television and things, but with music, it's just harder to get the attention of somebody right away.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Kind of telling the story in this way. I'm threading the needle, trying not to give away too much. There's still some mystery in it. I don't want to explain it too much because I think the listener is smart enough to put the pieces together on their own.
Yeah, yeah.
But giving them just like a little synopsis is helpful, I think.
Anyway, I'm gonna close it off now, unless you've got anything else you want to tell us or ask us or...
No,
from your
end. I think I'm good. Yeah, I appreciate the time you've given me.
No, it's fine. Listen, it's not about me giving people time, really. I don't want anyone to think of it like that. I want the artist to think of it as though, you know, they are giving me something to post and giving me a reason to be doing what I'm doing. So, like I say, whether any of it goes anywhere, who knows? But I'm sure once it's up there on the digital internet, it'll just remain there forever somewhere, probably. But there you go. So it's been good talking to you. I hope all your album does well. I'll be keeping an eye on it, what's going on. And if you send me something that you'd like me to do, I'll post it up on the website and we'll share it around and see how that goes.
All right. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, buddy. I'll catch you later and have a good album.
Yeah. Thanks.
No worries. Cheers. Bye. Bye-bye.